Thanks, Todd. This is Sanctity of Human Life Sunday. And that president was actually Ronald Reagan in 1984. Ronald Reagan made the proclamation. It's been validated by the president since then that we would celebrate Sanctity of Human Life Day here in January. We have a treat for you this morning. I want to ask, we have some people who are going to come up and talk for just a minute. Pam and Rachel. And they're going to talk a little bit about the ministry known as Heartbeats. Heartbeats ministry, well, I won't steal their thunder. I'll let them explain. And you guys come on over here. I don't bite. And let's start with
shots.
Yeah, have my shots, yeah. And we'll start with Rachel.
Okay, sure. All right, good morning. Well, I kind of took over. I was going to have Daniel do this part. Can you hear me okay? I feel like it's not on. Okay, it's not on. There we go. Okay.
You got to hold it close.
Okay, I got to hold it close.
There we go.
Is that good?
Yeah.
Okay. Daniel was originally going to do this, so I kind of took over last minute. He's doing his civic duty and staying home with a sick child, so I really appreciate that. We are going to talk about Heartbeats today. This is a local ministry here in Licking County and also Muskingum County. It is a ministry it originally started for the pro-life movement and to give women a practical place to go to help, to provide options for unplanned pregnancies. We kind of expanded from there. It's a little more holistic, and I'll let some of the other ladies explain some of the other aspects of our ministry. I want to emphasize a new ministry that we have just started. As many of you know, I'm a former foster parent. We've also adopted through the foster system. And Heartbeats has begun a new ministry. They titled James 1:27, and it's based on the verse, "Pure and undefiled religion in the sight of our God and Father is this, to visit orphans, widows in their distress, and to keep oneself unstained by the world." So this is a foster care ministry that they do jointly with Licking County Job and Family Services. One aspect of the ministry is supporting foster families and babies born addicted to drugs. They provide care packages, and people can either donate money or donate items for the care packages. And these are just items to help comfort the baby through what can be a very distressful time as they go through withdrawal and as they acclimate to the outside world. Another aspect of the ministry, which have been involved in, it's wonderful, is in providing support for foster youth that are getting ready to age out of the foster system. They hit 18, and a lot of times they are just completely dropped and don't have a lot of support systems in place. So Heartbeats has begun basically a letter writing call it. Yeah. Letter writing ministry, pen pal, like a pen pal type ministry, where you are provided a youth to pray for. You're given, you know, a first name. You're given just a little bit of information, a birth date, and you write letters and you send small gifts to them for holidays and for birthdays and just provide a contact here locally in their community that that we care for you, that you have a place to come home to when you age out of the system, and just to provide that support. Right now it's letter writing and gift giving. They hope to expand it more so that you will actually get some personal contact if the situation is right with the youth you're assigned. So both of these are ministries that you can help out with, that you can donate toward the baby ministry, or if you're interested in doing the letter writing, let me know. And I will get you set up with the contact to get assigned a youth for that. So that's one of our new big ministries.
Great.
Yeah.
Thanks, Rachel. Let's see. Yeah. Heartbeats.org is where you can find. There's also something in your bulletin there for more information. So Pam and Pam are volunteers with Heartbeats. Yeah. Pam Lianney, Pam George. And I'd like you to tell us a little bit about why you started volunteering with Heartbeats and what you do.
Okay. Last year, I was at Faith Walkers, and most of you guys know that I'm a teacher, so I was trying to think of a way that I could kind of do my ministry a little bit. You know, after you've been saved a while, the context that you have with unsaved people is that list kind of diminishes. So I was looking for an opportunity. So I thought, okay, I'm a teacher. I'll volunteer to teach at, you know, the elementary school, middle school. I teach science. And so I called the elementary school, called the middle school, called the high school, called where they send their kids for tutoring. They didn't need anybody. And I thought, okay, then God just closed that door. So I had also been thinking about Heartbeats because Rachel talked about it last year at the Sanctity of Lifetime. So I called Heartbeats and I thought I could volunteer. Now, I talk a lot, so some of you might be a little intimidated because you think, oh, I couldn't do that. But just a couple of the things that they have a boutique where they have supplies and people can take, the different clients can take a class, they watch a video, they can talk to people, and then they can use their, I call them baby bucks, to buy diapers and clothes. And we had a baby shower last year that helped supply the boutique. So you don't even have to talk to people, you kind of just run the store. So that's another ministry that they have that's really nice. I ended up being able to be a client, not a client, I'm a counselor. Hopefully I'm too old to be a client. Don't want to have any more babies. I like the whole grandma thing, just so you know. Anyway, the main reason that I volunteer there is I get to share the gospel. I have three appointments every week. I do a three-hour shift. They're one-hour appointments. And I get to share my testimony and my faith. And I don't come from a background where I had an abortion. I didn't have a child out of wedlock. And a lot of the volunteers do, but I didn't come from that background. So even if you don't have that background, God can still use you in that ministry. So I share the gospel with, they have a pregnancy test that they do. So the women come in, and I didn't know this when I first started working there, but all the women in Licking County have to come to Heartbeats to get their pregnancy verified. Because all these girls are taking pregnancy tests. I'm thinking, why are they coming here? But the hospital makes them come to Heartbeats to get their pregnancy test done and their first ultrasound. So it saves the hospital money, and we get an opportunity to share the gospel. So it's a great ministry. I've had lots of opportunities to share my faith. And just so I'm going to take some of Pam's thunder. Are you going to talk about your husband?
No. Yeah. Yes.
Okay. She's going to tell about what happened last week at Heartbeats, which was very, very exciting. Another program that they have is called Bridges, and this is the program that parents can come to either before they have their child or after they have their child, and they can take classes, and like I said, they can do their little baby bucks. So it's a great opportunity for me just to be able to share my faith, have another group of people that I can minister to out in the community. And the other thing that's really exciting is probably most of you guys know, but little Zane Marshall came through the Heartbeats thing there in Newark. Well, he didn't come through, but his biological mom did. So just so you guys know, we're seeing a personal touch of the effects of Heartbeats there. So fantastic. It's kind of cool.
All right. So I guess I'm going to bring up the rear here. I was going to share a little bit of my story about how I got there. I retired from nursing several years ago, and I wanted to find something to do with some of my time that had something to do with helping young people and somewhere where I could share my faith also more freely. In hospital work, we're not allowed to do that too much. So anyway, I had a really good friend that I worked with there, and she knew I was kind of trying to seek something out and suggested trying the pregnancy center in Newark. And we lived in the Newark area for almost 30 years, and I did not know that pregnancy center was even there. So anyway, I got online and looked at their information, and there was a big, long application form, and I thought, wow, like, I'm not a Sunday school teacher, I'm not a lot of things, and sometimes I think when we think of mentoring or leadership things that, at least for me in the past, have been, just kind of someone in our church that is more of a leader to do those kinds of things. But anyway, I just prayed about it, and I just asked the Lord to. The other thing I had to do is write out my testimony. It's really long. So anyway, I did it and went in the next day and spoke with Aaron, our client services manager, and I was just overwhelmed by all the things that were there. The building looks pretty small from the outside, but there's lots of rooms were set up like a home. There's chairs and tables and a table with a TV that we use for our videos with our clients and, you know, just to do the pregnancy test, the education, and all that. It's kind of like a homey atmosphere. We have a prayer room that can be used for meetings. We do also an abortion recovery program there for ladies that have had abortions, and it doesn't have to be recent. We've had women there that it's been 20 or 30 years since they've had their abortion, and it's just very helpful to them to just go through that process, even that many years later. So anyway, I decided to take up the role of a client consultant. And it was a little intimidating to me at first because it seemed like there was a lot to think about, absorb in trying to speak and learning how to listen really well. So anyway, I mentored somebody for a little while, and then Aaron just said, "You're fine, just go out on your own." So that was like really, I'm like, what? Anyway, so I've just had a really rewarding time doing that. Sometimes we might see a girl just one time and get to share some things, even from a spiritual standpoint, with them. A lot of times they're very thankful for the attitude that's there as far as people being loving and kind to them that don't know them. And they're pretty overwhelmed sometimes with realizing that people in the community and in the churches donate all those things that are in our boutique, and there's lots of stuff. And we have people in auxiliaries that make blankets. When we do a pregnancy test, at the end of it, if it's positive, we give them a pair of baby booties that are they're made by different women in our community that donate them, just to give them a picture of little feet so the baby seems real to them. Anyways, it's just a big network of lots of people just donating and volunteering, and it's pretty neat. And
What happened with Dan? I'm kind of anxious to hear
okay.
that story.
All right, just a second. The other thing that's there is it's a community of women and men that are in communion through knowing Christ, and it's like the highlight of my week to go in there and share burdens and praises and know that the other women there are going to rejoice or share my sorrow with me, and it's the height of my week. So anyway, my husband decided when he retired last February, he decided this fall that he would join me there. So we have to take a class to do the client consulting part, and he took the class along with Sam, and he started sometime this fall. Anyway, and he has a young man that he's seen a few times that is a single dad and has a lot of history as far as problems, and is here trying to get his life straightened out. Anyway, he told him his story of how he got saved, my husband, and shared the gospel with him, and he prayed to get saved on Thursday.
All right, yeah.
So one other thing that happened to me specifically is a year and a half ago, Heartbeats decided to get involved at the jail. The local jail was like two blocks down the street from us. And so our director and the lady that is the director of the services at the jail for the women attend worship together and had been discussing for a while, I guess, of how we could possibly go in there and be of help. So there's two teams of us. Two of us go together, and we do a class every week. We decided to change our focus a little bit. We don't do pregnancy education, but we do child care and relationship education, because most of the girls that we see are unwed, are from troubled backgrounds, most all of them have a history of some kind of abuse. And so it's trying to help them see the usefulness or good in having different kinds of relationships. And there's been a lot of girls that have gotten saved in there. That was the one thing actually that motivated me, is thinking that people are kind of at the end of themselves by the time they end up there, and that they would actually be more open to the gospel. So they have a really active chaplaincy there. And so we've had girls that made decisions of faith, and they get baptized there. They have a baptismal in their chaplaincy office. So anyway, we've seen some real excitement from them and growth, because they know that we are a Christian organization. And even after we do our educational part with them, then we usually have a spiritual discussion and talk about, you know, the aspect of whatever we're learning with spiritual truths. And so anyway, it's just been a really neat experience for me doing that, and that's out of my comfort zone anyway.
Well, for somebody who's outside their comfort zone, you've done really well speaking up here. So thank you.
Thanks.
Yeah. Now we have some baby bottles out on a table in the foyer, and those are for people to collect money. Just put your pocket change in there. You can take that home and make donations to Heartbeats then. Getting a lot of feedback, Jacob. Yeah, let's... All right. So, oh, looky there. How did that get in there? I would like to introduce you to my granddaughter. Yeah. I haven't got to meet my granddaughter yet. I'm really excited in June to meet my new granddaughter, Jenna, who will be here, and we are so excited to be grandparents for the first time and to see what God's doing in Levi and Anna's life. It's really exciting, so I couldn't help but share my first grandparent photo with you. So we're going to talk about life for a little bit, and then we're going to wrap up a few things with the membership we've been talking about as well. I have two points I want to make about life this morning. Number one, life is more than a political fad. And number two, there is grace. If you have had an abortion, or somebody in your family has had an abortion, we want you to know that we serve a God who forgives and loves. And we want to be agents of that love and forgiveness with you and your life. And so we want you, if you need to talk to somebody about that, you'd be more than welcome to talk to one of these ladies who shared this morning, or anybody else in leadership. As I was looking at Sanctity of Life Sunday online, I found this article by a preacher who said he hates Sanctity of Life Sunday because of the things that we have to talk about. It's very difficult to talk about some of these things. And so in doing so, we want to first start out and talk about the good side of this. Why is life sacred and eternal? In Genesis chapter 1 and 2, we read of the creation account. And actually, they're kind of like two different accounts of the same thing. Genesis chapter 1 tells it, and then Genesis chapter 2 kind of retells it. And each one of these, it talks about when God created mankind. And it says in Genesis 1 that God created man in his own image, in the image of God. He created them male and female. He created them, and God blessed them. So we see that God created men and women in his own image. And so some people call that the image bearer. We are all image bearers of God. Maybe that means he's got two arms and two legs and he's about 5'9". I don't know. But we're created in God's image, right? So we kind of look like our dad. And because of that, we are, life is sacred. But then going on in chapter 2, he says, "Then the Lord God formed man of dust from the ground and breathed into his nostrils the breath of life, and man became a living being." And some of you have heard me say this before, but when human life is conceived, the mother and father both contribute biologically something that comes together to form that new little baby inside. Now, the thing that mother and father each contribute are already living tissue. Well, where did that living tissue came from? It came from their parents, and from their parents, and from their parents, and from their parents, all the way back to when God created Adam and breathed the very first human life into existence. So the life force that animates our bodies came from God. And that's why life is sacred. To extinguish that is a terrible thing. And that's why the sin of abortion is difficult to deal with. And so at the same time we talk about this sin, we want to also extend grace and forgiveness and make sure that you are able to receive that as well, that you can find healing from that. So life is sacred. Life is also eternal. God gives us eternal life. When he breathes that life, we have this human form as long as we're alive here on the earth. And then when we die, when our body dies, our spirit lives forever somewhere in heaven or hell. And so this is a point of eternal significance where we spend our eternity. And that life that gives us is from the eternal, that God gave us is from himself, the eternal God. So we want to start to understand that life is sacred. And that's why we make a big deal about life. This is a terrible word, infanticide. Before abortion became the headlines in the last few decades in our culture, today, in previous ages, it was known as infanticide, the killing of infants. And what I did, I went to the fountain of all knowledge, Wikipedia, and I looked up infanticide, and there was a very thorough article that explained that this anthropologist was saying, people think this is a trend, but no, this is something that has been true for all people in all places in all times. This is universal sin that happens in nearly every culture that's ever lived on the planet, on every continent, that people have, and I simply was not aware of this. I really wasn't. Nobody teaches this to you in history class because it is so terrible. There are different methods and motives that people have had for thousands of years of killing infants. Different methods of exposure. Somehow trying to justify and thinking it's somehow humane to simply set a baby out and abandon them without actually taking their life by the parents' own hands is exposure. And this happens in a number of ways in different cultures, and when you read about it, even the Greeks and the Romans practice these things. This is something that's happened throughout all of time. Murdering the child, sacrificing the child to a pagan god. This was the Canaanites that God brought the children of Israel to displace and to claim the land of Israel. The Canaanites practiced human sacrifice. And not only them, but other people around the world have practiced human sacrifice. And these are things that God hates. The motives, I found there was one superstition about twins. If somebody had twins, they would kill both of them. It just doesn't make sense. These things that people believed in cultures around the world. And some of these, though, look very familiar. Population control, sex selection, they want boys, they want girls in certain cultures for certain reasons. The financial burden, maybe the baby has a birth defect. But we believe that all life is sacred from conception to natural death. all life is sacred. I want to look briefly at Exodus chapter 1, if you want to turn there in your Bibles. This is the first major account in the Bible that we have of infanticide. Now, to set this up, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Abraham's the father of the Hebrew people. God promised him, through your seed, all the nations of the world will be blessed. He's the father of the Jewish people, the Hebrew people, the children of Israel, however you want to say that. Abraham had Isaac. Isaac had Jacob. Jacob had all these sons. There was a famine in the land of Israel at the time, before it was known as Israel. They moved to Egypt, where Joseph, through God's hand, miraculously was able to help lead and guide and provide grain stores for 7 years through this famine. And then 400 years passed, and the children of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob were still living in Egypt. Not only that, they had their own side of town called Goshen. And the things that the Hebrew people practiced were an abomination to the things of Egypt. The Egyptians worshipped the cow as a god called Apis, and the Hebrews sacrificed cows. So it's like Hindu people today that revere cows. And so, you know, if you were to sacrifice a cow, that would kind of be a big deal to them. So the Hebrew people kind of kept to themselves. They were shepherds, and they were really despised by the Egyptian people. But Joseph's legacy, this is the guy that kind of helped save Egypt in the midst of this famine, so they kind of had some tolerance for them. But that tolerance had worn out. And the king, the Pharaoh at the time, realized, hey, these people are really, there are hundreds of thousands of these people that aren't really true Egyptians, and if some other foreign power comes in to war against Egypt, they could rise up and side with them, and Egypt would be done. And so that's where we pick up the story here in Exodus 1, chapter 1, verse 15. Then the king of Egypt spoke to the Hebrew midwives, one of whose name was Shiphrah, and the other whose name was Puah. And he said, when you are helping the Hebrew women to give birth and see them on the birthing stool, if it's a son, then you shall put him to death. But if it's a daughter, then she shall live. But the midwives feared God. Now these are Hebrew midwives who were God-fearing people. And they did not do as the king of Egypt had commanded them, but they let the boys live. So the king of Egypt called for the midwives and said to them, why have you done this thing to let the boys live? And the midwives said to Pharaoh, because the Hebrew women are not as the Egyptian women. They're vigorous, and they give birth before we can even get there. And so God was good to the midwives, and the people multiplied and became very mighty because the midwives feared God. He established households for them. And then Pharaoh commanded all of his people, saying, every son who is born, you are to cast into the Nile, and every daughter to keep alive. He was trying to subdue the Hebrew people by eliminating their ability to reproduce. And it was a terrible thing. And there are so many parallels between these stories in Egypt and Jesus. When you start to put the two and two together, all of a sudden you see all these amazing parallels. We know that Herod tried to extinguish Jesus and sent soldiers to kill all the 2-year-old males in the region around Bethlehem. So this is something that's not foreign to the Bible either. Remember back at Christmas Eve, I talked about this historian Tacitus, this Roman historian writing about the fall of Jerusalem around 70 AD. And as before he explains how Jerusalem fell, he says, let me tell you a little bit about who these Israel people are. And he notes this. He says, it's a crime among them to kill any newly born infant. They hold that the souls of all who perish in battle or by the hand of executioners are immortal. Now, this is a Roman who, in his culture, it's common to practice infanticide. And he's writing about something that's different about the Hebrew people, is that they believe that all life is sacred. And this was 2,000 years ago. That they believed that life was important and had value. Even if it was somebody who died in battle, he says. All life of all ages is sacred. This is a little documentary you can find online called the Dropbox Film. You know, it's no accident that for centuries the church has been known as a place where you can leave your baby. If you don't want to raise the child or not able to, churches around the world, places have had these warm little receivers like a bank deposit box on the outside of the building where people can drop off their babies. And they sometimes will come with notes of apology from the mothers and sadness. But this is a little documentary about a pastor in South Korea who has his drop box where they've rescued many, many children and been able to give them a life. Many of them abandoned because they had a birth defect of some kind. And they've had to support them and help them and give them the care that they need because nobody else was able to. That brings us to today. Are you aware that right now in Cleveland, you may have seen it in the news, there's been a billboard campaign of 16 different billboards that say abortion is, and it fills in the blank. Abortion is a blessing. Abortion is good parenting. And all of these lies about abortion, sponsored by the largest abortion clinic in Ohio in Cleveland, spreading these lies about what abortion is. So my point today, before I get to that point, what I want to say is that as we see, this is something that happens through all of time in every generation, in every culture. We just sang Psalm 46 this morning. The Lord of hosts is with us. That comes from Psalm 46. And you can imagine, when God brought the flood to the earth at the time of Noah, do you remember the reason why? It was because mankind had become violent. They were killing one another, taking each other's lives. God cannot stand murder. It's in the Ten Commandments. It's number 6. And so there's coming a day when God will have justice on the earth. And it says he makes wars to cease to the end of the earth. He breaks the bow and shatters the spear. He burns the chariots with fire. In our vernacular today, you could say that he takes the guns and he breaks them over his knee and he just melts the tanks and the aircraft carriers and the fighter jets. He just, out of rage against the violence that mankind has turned to, God one day will destroy all of these things. And justice will be had from the God who created all of us and loves us. It's his life that's inside of us. Life is sacred and eternal. That's why we've been talking a lot this year about people, God's treasure, our treasure. Every life is sacred. We treasure every person, no matter how old they are, if we've met them yet, if they've not been born. So, just a simple point this morning. This whole pro-life thing is not a passing political fad. This is something that marks the people of God, who believe that we really do have a creator in heaven that loves us, and it is his life that animates our bodies that he started way back with Adam in the garden. So this is not a passing political fad. It's something that really marks us as the people of God. And so we continue to do things like heartbeats because that's what we do. We are the people of God, and we do value life. So I want to change gears. We've talked about life a little bit. I want to button up a few things with our membership matters. We've been talking the last few weeks about membership here. If there's anybody that didn't get one of those membership books that you'd like one, we have some available. There's some on the table at the back, or we have some ushers who can hand them out if anybody wants to raise their hand. If you didn't get one of those yet, some ushers can pass those out to you. So I want to talk a little bit about my perspective on membership. You've heard Jack talk about membership for 2 weeks. One thing that membership provokes in some of us is this. You're not the boss of me, right? You're not the boss of me. I am a red-blooded American who is individual to the core. I don't need you. I can do it myself. Anti-establishment. I have never belonged to a denominational church in my entire life because it was the establishment. I've always born and raised in a community church. I've always been in a community church. Bit of a Christian rebel, maybe? I don't know how you would say that. This thought that there was some governing body that would dictate what would happen in the church and what you could preach, I never liked that concept. Now, I'm saying that referring to my 18-year-old self, who was very prideful. You're not the boss of me. And throughout our moves in different states and cities where we've lived, we've always been either affiliated with an independent church or a house church. And for a number of years, we were in the house church movement where there, and I want to be careful not to, I'm not bashing any one of these, but just to say that when we were in the house church movement, there were people that were all like, oh, that's big church, you know, they're so off base. We're about really community and getting together with one another, and we're doing it the right way because this is the way it was in the New Testament. And there's a lot of that kind of talk, and they're both the right way. There's not either one of those that's wrong necessarily, but this whole concept of my pride. If I'm to surrender my self-will, it seems like maybe, like, what am I giving up? What am I, if I say, okay, I'm part of these people now, that means that maybe I don't get to make all the decisions in my life, that I do lean on other people for their input and their wisdom in my life. And it's no longer just about me, this American individualistic person. And even recently, I had to confront this in myself, as few as 5 or 6 years ago when we came to New Song. And I started getting involved with the church and wanting to lead. And then I'm ordained as a elder into Great Commission Churches, which has this oversight. It's not a denomination, but there's accountability and framework, and you're submitting yourself to someone else. And I had to confront that in myself to say, I am willingly signing on the line. I am joining. I'm committing to these brothers and sisters. And so in a way, we have to lay our lives down for one another as Christ did for the church, to serve one another, to care for one another. You know, when we have a baby dedication and everybody in the congregation says, yeah, we'll help you look out for the kid, right? That's what we do, and everybody's there to help raise each other's kids and look out for them and give them words of wisdom, and if they see them veering off, to kind of steer them back. We make that commitment, and this is kind of the same way. We're committing to one another in membership, and that confronts my selfish pride, because deep down I want to say, you're not the boss of me. But we all, in submitting to one another, we enjoy the benefits. We've talked about all this last year of one another, praying for one another, serving for one another, caring for one another. And so we're just making that kind of official by signing on the line that, yes, I love you, you love me, we're a happy family, right? Yeah, all right. So if you got one of these Membership Matters booklets and actually tried to read every page in it, I know it's a little bit long, you may or may not have noticed that page 20 was missing in some of these when we passed these out. I don't know if it might even be missing. Yep, it's missing in this one too. Somehow at the printer, when we got the batch back, we didn't realize page 20 was missing. Page 20 talks about Great Commission Churches, and I want to just, it's actually printed on the back of your bulletin this morning is the content here that talks about Great Commission Churches. So Great Commission Churches, there's a lot of really cool stories I could tell about Great Commission, but just to make a long story short, it's a voluntary association of churches, of which New Song has been a part since the beginning, and these are our national leaders. Actually, Jack is not here this morning because he went to Chicago last night, and he's going to be meeting with the National Leadership Council of Great Commission Churches. And these are brothers who, one of the things that really impressed me when I came to New Song and started learning about Great Commission was these are men who were helping lead at the national level and help with accountability and churches and support. And the thing that impressed me so much was These aren't guys who just went to seminary and got a church and kicked back. These are guys who have really laid down their lives for the gospel. And when they speak, they can speak with authority because they've been there. They've traveled the world in missions. They've served for decades and pastoral care and in churches. And these are people who really have a testimony and experience to back it up. And it really is a comfort to me as an elder in Great Commission to know that I have brothers to care for me and help me and support me. And we can take that same comfort as a church as we help other churches when they have needs and they help us. So Great Commission is really a blessing. And they also sponsor some, I know some of you are new here, they sponsor a number of events throughout the year. There's a summer, what they call it, LT, life training for high school and college age. There's the Faith Walkers some of us came back from in between Christmas and New Year's, the conference they do in North Carolina every year. Great resources as a church association. It's not a denomination. It's a voluntary membership where we support one another. New Song is also elder-led. And this is one of the things that drew me to New Song, is that there's no senior pastor model here. We use the term pastor because that's what society tends to recognize as the guy that leads the church. Pastor is one gift called out in Ephesians chapter 4 when he talks about apostles, prophets, evangelists, pastors, and teachers. It's one of those gifts. But in 1 Peter 5, Peter is writing, he says, to the elders among you, to shepherd the flock of God that is among you, exercising oversight. And those are three buzzwords in the Greek that's called out in the booklet here. It's basically to be an elder, to shepherd or pastor, and to be an overseer. And we see all three of those as kind of the same job description, really, as an elder. And so we believe that we should have a plurality of elders, and those elders are on an equal basis. And Jack knew I would be talking about this today, and he wanted me to make sure you understood from him as well that he and I are equals in ministry here. That was the point that he wanted to make, even though he's been in ministry, I was almost going to say longer than I've been alive, not quite. He's been in ministry a long time. He says that he's been in ministry somewhere around 40 years. I was saved about 40 years ago, so we have a long time in the kingdom together before we met. But and just so some of you may not be aware, Jack does have a salary from the church, and I do not. Jack is a full-time pastor, and he has responsibilities in evangelism and missions with Great Commission's ministries and their missions as well. I, however, have a full-time job outside of New Song. I'm an IT computer guy, and so I have a full-time job, and then I do this in addition to that. So I kind of have two jobs, so to speak. I don't view this as a job necessarily, but this is what I do because I love you all, and I love the Lord, and I want to serve Him. And so I've laid down my life to be an elder here as well. So Jack and I are the two elders here at New Song. I do not receive any financial compensation from the church. There's a place when Paul is writing and he says, I work night and day not to be a burden to any of you. And so I do not take any salary from the church, and I actually funnel funds into the church instead through my employment outside of the church. So that's a little bit about me and Jack. And we serve together, and we lead together, and we talk with one another. We meet with one another on a regular basis, and any decision that we make is done together. And we see there's value in that plurality of leadership. And you've heard Jack say this many times, because in that same 1 Peter 5 passage, it says, when the chief shepherd appears. So in that same passage to elders, it also talks about the chief shepherd. So we are just under shepherds, so to speak. Jesus is the leader of our church, and we are helping, and because we're Jesus with skin on, just like you are, just helping, using our gifts, and leading here as shepherds, following Christ's lead in Scripture. Signing and agreeing. So on the back page of this document, there is a signature page that says that you affirm the statement of faith and the values of New Song, and want to support the church with your attendance and your prayer and your finances. And Jack talked a little bit about that already. One thing I want to mention here is that we've called out some doctrinal things in the statement of faith that we believe are core for everybody. There are a whole lot of other doctrinal things that we could talk about, like is it before the tribulation or after the tribulation when people are raptured up? And there's all kinds of views on these things. There are lots of other doctrinal views. And the thing that I've been so impressed with as a relative newcomer to Great Commission is that there is such an emphasis on unity and grace despite differences of theological opinions. And here in this body, there are people that don't share the same views that Jack or I share on some of these tertiary doctrinal things. And we're fine with that. We're content with that. And we want you to know that as well. Because we value more the relationship and what God has called us to do. As Jesus, we had a leadership event this weekend, and we got to watch a teaching by Dr. Henry Cloud. And he was saying, what's the one thing Jesus prayed for these disciples? In John 17, he prayed for unity. And that's what God wants to see in us as well. So we do our best not to let these other superficial doctrinal issues that have substance to them, but we don't want those to divide us. And so we just want you to know that you are welcome here, even though you may have differences of opinion theologically. We do emphasize the statement of faith as kind of the non-negotiables, right? Everybody should believe that Jesus was born of a virgin and we are saved by his blood and through grace and faith and those types of things that are core to believers. But outside of that, there's lots of room to have difference of opinion on different matters of doctrine and faith. So, Dennis, come on up here. I thought it'd be fun this morning to hear from somebody who's been at New Song from the beginning. We have multiple people who have been here. This year, New Song celebrates 30 years. But we haven't always had the name New Song. And we've not always been located in this building. So as a matter of just catching up on a little bit of New Song history, I know we have some new folks here. I'm going to introduce you to Dennis Henry. Everybody say hi, Dennis.
Hi, Dennis.
All right. So Dennis, what year did things start with forming the church that we know now?
Yeah. Well, actually, it goes back, I think, to 1984, 1985. Where there were a couple small groups that moved out from the campus or just off campus area. I don't know how many. It was kind of like one home group and maybe a couple Bible studies. And then some other people joined us and things, and it grew. So in 1988, Mike and Sue Kager moved here from Maryland, and we actually launched the church in September of 1988. So there was, you know, small groups and things meeting, you know, a few years before that, but 1988 was when we started meeting at Yorktown Middle School on Livingston Avenue, right by 270.
And what was the church called then?
Walnut Hills Community Church. And actually, we were kind of in the area. I think it was actually Walnut Hill area, but we called it Walnut Hills. And so that was why we kind of adopted that name and things like that. So
then we came to this building across the parking lot. Was that the next move?
Yes. We met at Yorktown Middle School, I believe, a couple years. And then we... We actually started, if you want to have me share that.
Okay.
When we launched the church and things, we went through a Phones for You program. That was kind of the thing to do back then, was call people. So we called over 30,000 people in the Reynoldsburg East Side area.
And this was
Columbus
before
area.
Caller ID, when people would actually answer the phone.
Right.
And they had home phone. That we would call, right? Yeah.
That's probably true. I hadn't thought about that, but that's probably true. Yeah. And so 30,000 people, we got about 33,000 people on the mailing list. And then 3,300 on the mailing list, and over 300 people showed up at the first service. And of course, you know, some people were curious and had, you know, they were attending different churches and things, and so they were just curious and things. So, but we started with over 300, and of course that dropped off a little bit, but it was really good core. We probably started with about 50 people when we got going after the small groups and things, and other people joined us, and momentum was going. So to start a church, we started with a base of 50, and we probably met for about a year or so pretty intensely, once or twice a week a lot of times, and a lot of prayer time and strategizing and kind of covering different ministries and things like that. Mm-hmm. So, but it was basically the law of large numbers, where we called up the 30,000 and then got, you know, 10%, a little bit over that on the mailing list, and then, you know, the 300 showing up. So it was kind of a neat time at that time.
Yeah. So we changed the name to New Song somewhere, and we got into this building somewhere. Can you give us the really skinny story of how we got here?
We believe, and anybody can correct me on this, because a couple of us were talking. We believe it was around 2000, 2001 that we built this building. Actually, we built an addition onto Tall Timbers to take care of classrooms and office spaces and things like that prior to that. But we built this facility, I believe, around 2000, 2001. Can anybody, does that sound good? Okay, September 2000.
Yeah.
So, and many people helped. I know, you know, Sam was involved with a lot of the construction, and many people helped a little bit here and there with a lot of the things.
Yeah. So I know there's a lot to talk about in the history. Can you share one favorite story from the history of New Song?
No. He kept telling me, he told me originally, he says, you're going to have about 5 minutes. And then he said, it's going to be really cut down. So probably Val Curry had shared, and one of the things, she was one of the first people that we took cookies to. She was on the mailing list and things. So Vicki Roman McAuliffe, was one of the first people she met, and she started coming and things. And so one of the things she shared with me is the fact that she started coming, and they started attending a Bible study and things. And some of you know her husband, Richard. He has some health problems and things, so he can't come very often. But he got involved in a men's Bible study and with Mike Cater. And that group led him to Christ and things. So it's just interesting, the different things. But we've had square dances and all kinds of things, father-daughter dances and Operation Christmas Child growing, you know, like crazy. And so many things over the course in time. But as we start to think, I mean, a lot of people don't remember that we used to have an outdoor stage where we used to have picnics and concerts. And we started with 3 swimming pools in between the buildings here. And we used that as a baptismal for a while. And then we bulldozed them. What's that?
Baptismal off the high dive.
Right. And so just from that standpoint, we had to bulldoze the pools just because of trying to keep up liability-wise. It just wasn't, you know, wise and things like that. Yeah. So a lot of different things. So, you know, maybe we can share some other things another time. So.
Yeah. So thanks, Dennis.
You're welcome.
And let's just stand right here for a second. I'd like, if you were part of the original Walnut Hills, would you stand? All right. So let's give these folks a hand. Thanks. Yeah. We are grateful for your service and commitment to New Song. We wouldn't be where we are today without all your contributions and faithfulness over these 30 years as a church. And so we're grateful this year to celebrate 30 years as a church, and we're excited about, you know, that's looking back, but we're excited then about what's going forward in New Song. We're growing and some exciting things are happening. And next weekend is what we call the big banquet. In lack of any other extraordinary term we could find, we just call it the big banquet. All right? It's not like other banquets. It's a big one. All right. So what happens is next Sunday evening, this is our annual, it's not really a church business meeting, but it's a chance where you can hear from Jack and me, hear a financial report from the church. But more than that, you get to just hang out and spend time with one another more than you have on Sunday morning. Lots of good food. Yeah, lots of good food. We're going to share the vision for 2018. Jack and I will share where we see God taking us this year, what plans we have in store for ministry and some opportunities. There will also be the chance to win some gift cards if you come next Sunday night. So we encourage everyone to come and bring some food and enjoy some good time of fellowship and some vision casting for the church for the year ahead. So with that, I'm going to go ahead and turn things over to Paul, who has some announcements and things in the bulletin, and we'll receive the offering.